how many rich people do you think there are that play polo left that can afford to like ship their horse off to like Germany from the US?
Oh, nowadays,
I just got mine back. I mean, we went with FedEx. We didn't go with UPS because I've heard bad things about the UPS, like you know, damaged horses.
How about say, did you check your horse to make sure he wasn't damaged in shipment?
Yeah, the FedEx does a tremendous job. They feed and oat them or whatever.
Gotcha. You know? Gotcha.
Make sure barriers on staff, so they change out the shoes. You know,
gotcha. Yeah, I shipped them DHL one time. They just wrapped the whole thing in saran wrap and tape.
Well, yeah, well that's because that's what they do, and they leave a little hole for like food and poop.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
Fuck off.
And Ryan.
I'm just gonna throw it out there, and I don't want judgment. The everything bagel Pringles flavor is the best flavor of Pringles out there right now, and I will not even hear any discourse on this.
It's all right. That's a very white opinion. It's great. It's funny because you know people make fun of white people for not being spiced, right? But we love the everything bagel. So,
oh, it's nothing but all the spices. It's all the spices. I can tell you all the spices. I like all the spices on a bagel at that.
Oh man.
Well, I couldn't find them at Publix. I was telling Steve earlier.
Are you talking about the Thomas everything?
Maybe
Thomas brand, because that's what we get, and my wife makes pork leg and cheese on it. And it's
the Thomas bagels are good, but they have sunflower seeds in them, so it threw me off the first time I had them.
Are you allergic?
No, it just threw me off. I didn't realize they were gonna be in there.
You know, you're making a pizza bagel, you got it just right, and you bite into
there,
it.
And it's that meme where the guy spits out his coffee, but Ryan spits out the everything bagel. He's like, sunflower seeds.
Well, I went to
you
Walmart.
You gotta warn me before that. You get that spicy.
Publix doesn't have like the good flavors of Pringles. Publix has all your generic base Pringles flavors. But you go to Walmart and they have the most absurd stuff. Yeah, like they had chili cheese fries Pringles, everything bagel Pringles. Like they had everything.
See, those are prone to sin. So
that's because when you go to Walmart, Walmart's like going to like the marketplace, like an Indiana Jones movie, or like the most likely cantina.
There's just piles of fucking curry powder sitting around. Oh my god. Indy, Henry, follow me.
And not because they're supposed to be there, but because the person who set them up just knocked it over and just left it there.
No, someone came there to buy them and they set them down and left, which is the classic thing. I still say that if I win a good amount of money from the lottery, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go to Walmart and I'm going to buy everything that's not in the right place, but only if it's like really out of place, you know?
Yeah.
You find some fucking paprika with the women's bras and shit like that, and it's like,
buying that paprika
immediately. How did this get here? Some Hungarian got distracted by the bras, put the paprika down, and ran off. That's what they do. Fucking Hungarians, man. That's why we have Nazis in our government over there.
So long story short, I'm going to be shopping at Walmart from now on for my specialty.
What I'm saying is that paprika diversions from bras lead to fascism in Hungary. So there's a direct line.
It's true.
Broken path.
There's a number of papers on that in J Store at the moment.
Speaking of spicy fascist, what are we talking about this week?
Today we're going to be talking about the odd and discontinued sports of the Olympics.
Ooh, let's go. Man, that's a good topic.
So some of them, we're going to start with some of the ones that are kind of like less interesting sort of proto sports, and then move into like the wilder ones. Okay. Ending with the wildest, which is back in the Olympics, but was discontinued for much of the history of the Olympics.
Shooting.
Is not shooting.
Ah.
The answer
probably gonna be
might
shooting.
Surprise you.
The answer might surprise
there
me.
There are several shooting ones we saw the other day that are no longer in the Olympics that were quite fucking ridiculous.
Wait, what? What were they doing?
One was like, instead of skeet shooting, you're just shooting actual pigeons. I don't want to say too much because I might take some of Steve's thunder, you know.
Those are generally not considered to be quote unquote Olympic sports. It's kind of like the breakdancing at the current Olympics. It's just a demonstration sport.
That's what a man with bad aim says.
Because like when you go back to like the 1900 Olympics, it doesn't seem like there's a firm record of like who won what medal for some sports.
Interesting.
The first one that was discontinued and short-lived was rackets. It is a indoor sport played with a racket that was popular.
Everyone and they had to cancel it.
You just beat the shit out of each other.
He was a racketeer. You get it? Do you get the joke?
But it was mainly played in the United Kingdom, the United States, and Canada. It was also called hard rackets to distinguish itself from squash.
I just want to be nationalist here and just say that's where all the normal sports are played. So, you know. <Jesus Christ. laughs> God damn it. Oh, man.
In 1908, there were at the Summer Olympics, there were two rackets events. Only British players participated in the competition, and all seven of them received medals.
These participation trophies.
Imagine you're the guy that receives like the last bronze medal.
No, absolutely not.
The next one is called Jeu de Paume. Which means a game of the hand.
I gold medaled in this one. Every time I lay in bed, I hear the Olympic music. I bust out the old hand. Oh, never mind. Wrong sport. Sorry.
I went in the room to get some stevia for my tea, and my wife said that Hard Knocks for the Chicago Bears is on, and I told her not to watch it or I'll fucking divorce her. So
I'll show you a hard knock. I'll knock you through that fucking wall if you put that on right now.
Dude, I hit the lottery, okay? My wife loves watching me play video games, and she likes watching ESPN documentaries. I mean, she could do anything else wrong, and that would make up for it, you know?
You guys adopt me. Is that a thing?
I mean, I can adopt you, but you gotta work the fields. And then I can just live
with you guys and be cool with you guys.
You got to pick okra all day.
Oh, God damn it.
I got to pick it later after the podcast. I got to mow the lawn, pick okra.
Nah, I don't want that bad. Anyway.
So Jeu de Paume, as I mentioned, is literally means game of the hand, which is sort of like one of the first versions of like a tennis type game that existed.
Hmm. Did you say Jeu de Paume?
Jeu de Paume.
Oh, okay.
Joie de Paume. It's sometimes called a real tennis. It's called court tennis in the U.S. Or in France, it's called court de paume. And it is it's sort of like a precursor to tennis, as I mentioned, that was originally played without rackets, hence where the game of the hand name comes in. But eventually, it is rackets were introduced.
So is it basically like handball?
Kind of. And it was it has the oldest ongoing annual world championship, which was first established over 250 years ago.
Nice.
It was played at the 1908 Summer Olympics, and it was the only time it was featured at Olympic Games as a medal event. In the official report of the 1908 Olympic Games, the sport is referred to as tennis, parentheses, Jeu de Paume, while tennis is referred to as lawn tennis.
Okay.
An outdoor version called Longue Paume. Played at the 1900 Summer Olympics, but we're not sure if they actually got a medal for playing it.
Okay. So it was just like playing it just to play it?
Well, yeah, it's sort of like a demonstration sport. Like they might have gotten some other award for it, but they did not receive an Olympic medal.
Gotcha. Okay.
It was also an exhibition sport at the 1924 Summer Olympics. Though that's not really clear, exactly the extent that it was like officially recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Because the French Federation of Longue Paume held its national Longue Paume, championships during the Olympics. At the 1908 Summer Olympics, Jay Gould II, grandson of the railroad magnate Jay Gould, won the gold medal.
Sorry, I was muted. My bad. I didn't want to think you had a tough crowd. I was muted.
No tough crowd. I'm here.
but yes, Jay Gould II was the winner of the only gold medal in Jeu de Paume.
So, can I just like make up a sport? And just go present it to the IOC and get it in there. It'd be the only medal in person.
France did that. That like handball game they were playing. France invented that in like the late 90s or early 2000 to create a sport specifically for them to gold medal in. The handball.
Cheating at everything. You got to invent something so that you can win it.
And that, then, like handball soccer game, yeah.
And then you see Kenya just come in and sweep you. France is like, we haven't won any gold medals in a while. Let's just make some shit up, and then we could like kind of, you know, sully the rules a little bit, make it, you know, obviously favor us. And then you get like Team Nigeria just comes in and just fucks them up. That would be the funniest fucking thing in the world.
It would be even funnier if it was like an like not an actual like nation state, like it was like Puerto Rico. Like, dominates them. Hong Kong's like handball team just like dunks on them.
Fucking Guam comes rolling in that bitch to like Eye of the Tiger.
just big Samoan guys just like elbowing their way like Barkley through.
The Samoan team has volunteered for this game. They've never played. They don't know the rules, but fuck it. They're going to see what they can do.
They're just going to run through everybody.
It just steamrolls France.
Yeah.
Polo, as in the sport that you play on horseback, was introduced in the Summer Olympics at the 1900 Games.
Wait, that's a real sport? I thought that was just a little picture of the guy on my shirt.
I thought it was just what Riff Raff said. Polo. You still rocking Ralph Lauren Polo.
It would also be at four other Olympiads before being removed from the official program after the 1936 Summer Olympics.
Do we know why?
It mainly because of logistics. It had declined in popularity, and there was also a lot of, like, it was logistically and financially difficult to compete in the sport because everyone on the team has to bring their own horse.
Have you seen the fucking people who play polo? They're all absurdly rich. If you're going to sit there and say it's a financial burden, dude, you are playing polo, bro. You are insanely rich.
Well, how many rich people do you think there are that play polo left that can afford to like ship their horse off to like Germany from the
U.S.? Oh, nowadays,
I just got mine back. I mean, we went with FedEx. We didn't go with UPS because I've heard bad things about the UPS, like you know, damaged horses.
I was about to say, did you check your horse to make sure he wasn't damaged in shipment?
Yeah, the FedEx does a tremendous job. They feed and oat them or whatever.
Gotcha.
You know?
Gotcha.
And I believe a farrier is on staff, so they change out the shoes, you know?
Gotcha.
Yeah,
I shipped them DHL one time, and they just wrapped the whole thing in saran wrap and tape.
Well, that's because that's what they do. And they leave a little hole for, like, food and poop. And then they just throw them in, like, a crate full of hay and just ship them. Usually they come by boat, right? I mean,
yeah, that's the FedEx. That's the FedEx difference, you know, because they run them around on the ship deck, you know, mark them up to a fine lather, and then, you know, put them to their stall.
Anything else at FedEx, I'm not shipping, you know, at all. But horses, no problem. Yeah, it's
immediately, huh?
No brainer. Well, I don't even have to think about it.
Well, that was also the thing too. Before I want to say it was.
What are we talking about?
I was say it was before the. It was the 08 Olympics, I think it was. I think that was the one where Mitt Romney, or the 2012 Olympics, where Mitt Romney he had a dressage horse in the Olympics.
I mean, that tracks.
Aren't there? Yeah, I was about to say, aren't there a lot of rich people who just send their horses for dressage?
It's goddamn Mitt Romney, you know?
His dressage horse, Rafalka.
But, like, isn't that a thing? If you're rich, you just send your horse?
No one from his family was doing it.
It depends on what you're doing. Like horse racing, usually the rider doesn't own the fucking horse, right? But and that's just because of like logistics. But in the Olympics, they usually own a horse. I think a lot of those people own horses.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure though. I'm pretty sure they do though, because it's a different type of horse, you know.
It's already been said a million times, but I do want to endorse Snoop Dogg for official American Olympic mascot.
He was fantastic.
He was like dressed up in the dressage with Martha Stewart, like watching, like he's dressed up in the whole riding gear. I was like, oh, this is hilarious.
Yeah. He borrowed the outfit from Andre 3000.
You can tell it didn't fit at all.
In 1996, the IOC voted to classify polo as a recognized sport, but it has not been competed at the Olympics since 1936.
Steve, I just want to let you know real quick, though. Pinkos is an acceptable word in Words with Friends. Just letting you know.
Kinkos?
Pinkos, like coffee place.
Pinkos. Oh yeah, like
Pinko commie leftist.
Listen, Kinko's like a college.
You all see what the definition was. Hold on, let's see. A person with left wing liberal views. I just scored 54 points off that Jan. That John.
I'm such a pinko.
All right, what did you say? What sport was made legal?
No, it was recognized as a sport. Polo.
Oh, polo. Yeah. That's a fucking dumbass sport.
Tug of war was held at.
Any more about polo? Polo got like 1 minute.
What was to say about it? Wasn't some about where like a horse went crazy, like killed a bunch of people.
That's what happened. May the horse grab the hammer from the rider and start smacking heads.
It's like the rodeo when the bull gets out.
Yeah.
How do they ride the horses in water polo? Wouldn't the horses be underwater the whole time?
That is very like, carefully. That's like the most high question I've ever heard, and you're not even trying yet today. Right? It's like, hey, you know how they have horses in polo? Well, do horses swim? Because water polo is a thing.
Or they put a bunch of like dolphins in the pool and like you ride a dolphin instead of a horse.
Oh my God. That would be
IOC, come talk to me. I have ways to make the Olympic Games so much better.
Yeah, like maybe
we're gonna save the Olympics.
Make up your mind on gymnastic bronze medals, by the way. Did you see that shit?
What happened?
The one U.S. woman, Childs, I think her name is, she like argued that her routine should have been scored more difficult, basically, but they overturned it, and she ended up getting the bronze medal, which pushed two other girls down from Bulgaria. It was one of those nations. Anyway, long story short, today they took her medal away and reversed it.
What?
Yeah. Well, they reversed it for her, and now they reversed it back. And it's like, okay, make up your mind. And the reason they reversed it is because her coach was 3 seconds late to appeal. Fucking Olympics, man.
What?
I love the Olympics, but it is some bullshit ass. Like, the rules and stuff there are just absolutely stupid.
He has a certain time to appeal, and he was 3 seconds late.
You have
late.
A minute, I think. You have 1 minute. You can appeal after they score you. You have 1 minute to appeal it.
Do you lose a timeout if you fail the appeal or something?
No, you just lose the appeal, but you, you know.
You again, Olympics, hit me up. If you want to appeal this thing and you lose points off your overall score. I am telling you, we could make this shit real good.
Oh, my God.
Ryan's going to do to the Olympics what the XFL did to football.
Instead of like an NFL EA Sports Madden, I'm more of an NFL Blitz, baby.
NFL Rush.
Dude, NFL like, Blitz was the best. We used to play
Blitz,
you ever play MLB Slugfest? We used to call it Chugfest. We would
every time you hit
a home run, you had to chug a beer, and it was a pretty common occurrence in that game.
Jesus.
Tug of war. Tug of war was held at the summer Olympic Games of every Olympiad from 1900 to 1920.
That's bullshit. I want tug of war. That sounds like a sport I could get into, you know?
Me and my third grade track and field team would demolish all competitors.
I just started eating like turkey tails, like Yokozuna shipped to the Undertaker, you know?
And just be the anchor.
Steve, you know that story? I just saw it this week, so I just heard about it. But I guess Yokozuna used to ship turkey tails to the Undertaker, and then they'd go over his house and have a barbecue, and turkey tails are basically like 90% fat. And you just eat those.
God, like, sounds delicious. God.
But yeah, you can get real fat and anchor that rope, you know?
You know, the Icelandic team takes gold because they've got the mountain on their team.
This isn't fair.
Originally, the competition was entered by groups called clubs. And a country could enter more than one club in the competition, making it possible for one country to earn multiple medals. This happened in 1904 when the United States won all three medals, and in 1908 when the podium was occupied by three British teams.
Mm.
Sweden was also among the top countries with two medals, one as a member of the mixed team. There was a team of mixed, like, different nationalities in the club.
Oh, I have a question, because I saw this the other night. I guess this kid is a pole vaulter, and he jumps for Sweden, but he's American. His parents are Swedish.
Yeah, if you have
somehow he's jumping for Sweden.
If you have citizenship, you can go for another country.
Yeah, because yeah, America, you live
here in America.
The,
you were born
America's
here in America.
One, Giannis, freaking the Greek freak, played for Greece.
Yeah, but he was born in Greece.
No, but I mean, my, like, if you, my point is, he lives here, as far as I know. And he
but this kid is like 17. He's 17 years old, was born here, lives here. Probably, honestly, in all realistic, doesn't know anything but here. Might have gone on vacation, but like vacation, nothing crazy. But why would you go for Sweden and not USA?
There's also some African countries that will essentially like buy like swimmers and stuff like that to compete
oh,
for them.
Really? Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brutal.
Wow.
So during its time as an Olympic sport, it was considered to be part of the Olympic athletics program. Although the sports of tug of war and athletics are now considered distinct. After the 1920 games, the IOC decided to streamline the Olympic program to manage the number of sports and participants.
We are getting way too many fuck shit games in here. We got to trim the fat here somewhere.
We're getting rid of this. We're getting rid of what number am I thinking of? We're getting rid of painting.
Tag,
what
you got to go.
What number am I thinking of? I could get in that, you know? 7. See, look how good I was.
Hide and seek, gone.
But tug of war was one of the sports removed that, and like cops and robbers.
It wouldn't be hide and seek. That's a kid's game. It would have to be manhunt. You ever play manhunt? You know, where you can go in your neighbor's yards?
Yeah, absolutely. And you play it at night is the key.
Freaking in Florida. Did you play it in Florida? Because like I feel like you get shot in Florida. Was that part of the allure? Like it's scary?
No, like we played it here in Florida back in like the early 2000s.
Before the old people got riled up by Fox News and they were still Tim Walz.
That and when I lived in Orlando and not in the fucking boonies.
Oh, okay. There you go.
One of the oddest of the sports that used to be at the Summer Olympics was water motor sports.
Bro, they just got jet skis in a pool.
At the 1908 Summer Olympics, there were 3 motorboat racing events.
That's kind of cool, though. Yeah, I'm down
Various,
with it.
Yeah. Various
well,
sources.
You know, it's funny, though, Steve. There's still a lot of motorboating going on at the Olympics in the Olympic Village.
Yeah. It just happens on top of those cardboard beds.
It also shows out the ingenuity. It shows both the athletic spirit and strength and ability, and also the ingenuity of people as they try to get around all the measures to stop them from having sex in the Olympic Village.
Like world class athletes aren't going to find a way.
Oh man!
The various sources refer to the sport as water motorsports, motorboats, and power boating. The 1900 and 1908 Summer Olympics were the only ones to feature motorized sports. Motor racing was featured in 1900, but it was not a medaled event. The IOC has never decided which events were Olympic and which were not.
I don't feel like motorized water boating or motorboating or anything should count, because the Olympics is supposed to be feats of human strength and skill and agility. And you're basically
just some of them
saying,
use tools. I mean, like, you know, the shooting uses a tool. I mean, like, there are implements, so like you could potentially go that direction. I don't know. I understand the human element needs to be like the main element, is what you're saying. Right.
Yeah, in a boat, you're just going to steer it. But like the boat is really doing most of the work, because the idea is for speed.
You got to paint it.
Next, Ryan's going to start installing NASCAR, and then we're just going to get into a screaming match.
Oh, dude, listen, I won't insult it right now if you don't want me to, but just know I hate NASCAR.
You're just mad because you can't make a left turn, that's all.
I'm about to say, I turn left, the most exciting thing I've ever seen in my life. Look, they're going to turn left again.
Oh, shit, they did it. These absolute mad lads.
Literally nothing matters in a fucking NASCAR race until the last 10 laps, and then that's the only thing that matters.
Have you ever seen anyone turn left that much? Like, that's just crazy. I couldn't do that.
Yeah, that's, you know, the repetitive stress, you know, to their...
Oh yeah,
their wrists, you know, from turning left all the time. And, you know, some of them don't turn left. That's why you watch, because some of them, they accidentally turn right and it causes a big crash.
That's a disaster.
Famously, Dale Earnhardt.
Let me tell you, though, you know, one thing is about racing that is actually interesting is they get CTE, dude. Like, Dale Earnhardt has CTE. Like, it's a legit sport. I mean, they are really doing...
Watch the cameras.
They're kind of doing a superhuman thing. I mean, they're going like 300 miles an hour or something, right?
They're just getting slammed back and forth. If you look at like the in-car camera,
that's because they need the Batman cowl. They have to not be able to like move their head.
I mean, yeah, but then in that case, you get in a really bad accident. Uh-oh, you're done. Like, true. Being able to move your neck actually helps you because, like, you know, force of impact, instead of being straight and rigid and your shit's just going to break, you know, being able to move and be flexible allows it, you know, some degree of safety.
True.
That's why they say God loves a drunk, because in a drunk driving accident, if you're the drunk driver and you, like, run off the road or whatever, you're asleep, you're drunk, you're whatever, you're just, you're loose. That's why drunk drivers never get fucking hurt.
That's that, like, a lot of people know that. And I didn't know it for a long time, but I found out about that after I just gotten the we got rear-ended a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And I had to get some therapy and all this other bullshit because I already have neck issues. Mm-hmm. And so I was like leaning forward when the guy hit us. And he didn't mm-hmm. even hit us that hard, but I looked in the mirror and saw he was going to hit us, and I just, like, held myself real tight.
Yep. And I'll do it.
The doctor told me, he's like, yeah,
it's got to be loose, man.
He's like, just let it go.
It's got to be loose. It's going to happen. Just, you got to be loose.
Yep. It's crazy. Keep it loose.
But all three motorboating events use the same distance, 5 laps around an 8 nautical mile course for a total of 40 nautical miles.
Every time you say motorboating, I only see one thing.
At each of the events, multiple boats started. However, only one finished due to the weather. That was there was a gale force wind that was blowing during the course of the competition. Hmm. Events were held from August 28th to August 29th, 1908. Class A was the open class. It was scheduled to take place on the first day of the competition, August 28th. There were two boats, one Woolsey, Sidley, and Dylan. They began the race, but Dylan abandoned the race partway through the first left with Woolsey, Sidley finishing first due to the weather becoming too severe to continue the race.
You son of a bitch. You quit.
I mean, they're kind of showing themselves right now why this is an Olympic event still.
A second attempt at the run took place the next day after the two other races had been completed. Woolsey, Sidley again started, this time against Camille, the only French boat to take place in the competition. But Woolsey, Sidley ran aground on a mud spit, leaving Camille to finish alone for the gold medal.
Yeah, I mean, that happens to everyone at least once in their life, mud spit.
I don't even know. Sounds like something that you catch in a mud pit when you go and try to, like, drive through the mud, go mud.
Yeah. Well, you know, I went down to that mud spit, took the tire right off the tundra.
Class B, the under 60 feet. It was held on August 28th after the abortive first run of the opening class. Only two boats appeared at the starting line, Quicksilver and Jernis. Quicksilver became threatened by water coming in over the sides and abandoned the race. Jernis, a small boat with an extra crewman to bail water, was able to finish to make its crew the first Olympic champions in motorsports.
Yeah, that's a huge asterisk on top of that one.
And Class C, the 6.5 to 8 meter category, its first race was held on August 29th. Jiranus, which had won B class the day before, appeared again. This time her competition was Sea Dog. However, Jiranus was the only boat to finish, as Sea Dog experienced engine problems and had to be towed off the course. You know, this is like 1908, so they probably also have like a lawnmower engine for
So the event today was a little bit delayed when they couldn't get the damn thing to start.
They couldn't find 2-stroke oil.
One of them just keeps burning his hands on the carburetor.
Ow, fuck. Jimothy, I told you to stop touching that.
A sport that was part of the Olympics but is no longer there, I thought was particularly interesting, is Basque pelota.
Is that like Spanish pelota? Like Basque?
Like, yeah, as in the Basque region of Spain.
Okay. I'll do Pilates. I don't like them.
So the origin of the
Pilates is great, man. I do Pilates almost every day. I do I do a Pilates move, which is just planking. Planking is a Pilates move. So
Yeah, not onto a planking. I haven't done planking since like 2010.
Dude, I can do. I think I'm probably worse now because I hurt my ab, like my lower abdominal wall. But I got up to like a minute and 20 seconds, which is
pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good for, you know, for a chubby dude, you know.
Pretty good. The sword is tied to the decline of the an ancient form of Jude Palm.
I thought you were going to say of like the Western civilization.
I mean, the fact that we're not playing this game anymore just shows that we're at that level. There's still people playing it. And it originates around 1700. It evolved to the modern Jude Palm and eventually to lawn tennis rural and alpine Pyrenean communities still play the original form of the game.
They play in the Pyrenees?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, because it's like right next to the Basque region.
Oh, okay. You know me, dude. I'm fucking geographically backwards.
Blind spot.
Every time someone tries to teach me geography, I like get less info out of it.
in the Basque country, the Pasaka and Laxoa are local versions of Palme that involved a peculiar style of pelota. Instead of playing face to face with a net in the midfield, they throw the ball against a wall. According to the first historian, Chipete Echeto, the first recorded matches took place in Napoleonic times, and it's believed the game was close to currently a rare specialty of Rabat. The mid-19th century also saw a sort of craze in pelota, where the player Gansiki is considered the original quote-unquote father of Chistera, the basket-shaped racket that can propel the ball at high speeds, introduced in 1850. So when I say basket-shaped racket, it is sort of like in Hi-Li. Hi-Li is a sport that evolved from this.
Okay.
There are variants of this where they play with a regular racket and variants where they play with the hand racket that's like in Hi-Li.
Dude, have you ever fucking seen Hi-Li? Like, actually watched it? Those balls go at a speed that is just melts my fucking brain. And I'm just like, imagine getting fucking cracked upside the head with one. You die.
Oh, bro,
you'd be killed.
It is a dangerous sport, man.
But it's wild
literally,
to watch.
People literally die playing Hi-Li.
It's wild to watch.
Mm-hmm.
The top champions at the end of the 19th century, such as Chiquetto de Combo, were immensely popular in the...
Yep.
And were the best paid sportsmen of their time. The first official competitions were organized in the 1920s and led to a world championship in the 1950s. In 1924, the United States built its first fronton in Miami. And also during the 80s and 90s, Hi-Li became popular in Miami and Florida. But yeah, with the growth of casinos and legalized betting in the United States, the popularity of Hi-Li evaporated.
Yeah,
and only one not... Recently, only right? One non-amateur fronton is still known to exist in the U.S. There used to be one by the dog track in Melbourne.
By the dog track. Yep. A guy I work with went there tons of times to bet.
The one in Melbourne?
Dogs. Yeah, he went to bet on the dogs.
Yeah, because I remember we'd drive by it, and I asked my dad what's Hi-Li. His response would be something to bet on.
Yeah, there was a Hi-Li place. I want to say that there used to be signs for it, or there are signs for it on 75 somewhere. I might be crazy, but I know I've seen signs for like Hi-Li and dog racing.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
The basic principle in hand pelota is that there are two teams of two players each. The team to serve bounces the ball, then propels it towards the playing area of the narrow front wall, where it is to rebound between the low line demarcating the low off area and the high line demarcating the high off area.
All right, this sounds like the NFL's new kickoff rules. I'm immediately uninterested. It's way too fucking convoluted.
Now, Roger Goodell to explain us hand pull.
At the 20, at the 10.
I like how they're like, well, this will also make it so that the high speed impact hits the players were taking that were potentially causing a lot of injuries are going to be reduced because the kicking team cannot start moving until the runner has the ball and they start moving.
Yeah.
And then you watch it and it's like they're still crashing into each other at like 30 miles an hour. You fucking goddamn twig. What is wrong with you?
Did you see the onside kick rules changes?
Like you got to call it. Like you can't just.
You have to let the other team know that you're doing it. You can't do it before the fourth quarter. Like there's all this dumb shit, and I'm just like, I don't understand how. What problem are you solving with this? It doesn't make any sense. Like I've only seen, I think in my lifetime I've seen two recovered onside kicks, and I've watched thousands of football games. So like what the fuck? At least hundreds.
I feel like I've seen a bunch, but that might just be in my head. But I feel like I've seen like a bunch. But
recovered onside kicks?
Yeah. But nobody does them. Super like nobody rare. Fucking does them unless it's in the fourth quarter, the end of the game. Nobody does them.
Yeah, it's super.
Nobody
rare.
Cares. I don't
you
see
only
fucking.
Do it if there's just like a slim chance, you know.
I don't see Parcells ever sending them guys out there back in the day. Be like, all right, it's the second quarter. There's 13 minutes left. Let's do an onside kick real quick. Like what?
Yeah.
No.
You right.
So the ball may either be played so it rebounds directly off the front wall onto the playing floor or onto the long side wall first. The opposing team may either play the ball immediately after rebounding from the front wall or side wall without rebounding from the playing floor or after having rebounded from the playing floor once. A team scores by playing the ball in such a way that the opposing team is unable to play the ball before it has rebounded off the playing floor more than once. And playing the ball in such a way that it rebounds off the front wall and rebounds off the floor and outside the playing area. So it's kind of like tennis. Like if I'm sure they probably played like a version of this in like Star Trek, where it's like 3D, like multiple wall tennis, essentially multiple floor tennis.
It's kind of like racquetball almost.
Yeah. The team may
play racquetball.
Me?
Yeah.
I never played it. I watched people play it at the gym that I used to go to.
Yeah, I've never played it either. It looks intense.
Yeah, and it's always old people that play it with goggles on it. That's it. And I'm like, you know, the racquetballs are cool. They're soft, but man, getting smacked with one of them bad boys would probably fucking hurt.
Yeah,
when it picks up speed.
Absolutely.
A team may also score by the opposing team hitting the front wall, but either below the low line or above the high line. And hitting the ball in time, but failing to reach the front wall.
The high ally line?
The ball used in pilota is called the pilota in the Basque Country and the pilote in France. And the pilota in Spain.
That's just the name for ball.
Pilota. Yeah.
Yeah,
there are different sizes, different weights, and different materials for each discipline that is played. The ball is made out of box, has a boxwood core between 0.79 to 1.42 inches in diameter. It's wrapped in a latex wire, and the core of the ball is different for individual age groups so that the weight limit is respected. The core can also be made from latex.
Okay.
A wire of pure new wool is then
my latex salesman.
A wire of pure new wool is then carefully wrapped around the core so that the ball is round and even throughout. The structure of cotton wire is sewed on the surface of the ball so that the wool stays in place. A number of eight shapes are cut out from goatskin and are sewn together onto the ball in one or two layers. Some disciplines use a glove, a chistera. There's different kinds, such as a short, shallow glove that's used when playing on the fronton. There's also the grand chistera, which is a long and deep glove.
I need pictures of these things to really wrap my mind around what's going on, but go ahead.
Well, it's like a highlight glove.
Oh, okay, just like that curved basket thing. Okay.
And then some of them also use a palas or paletas, which are wooden rackets. These also differ in like size and shape and weight as well, depending on the class. At the 1900 Summer Olympics, a Basque pilota tournament was held. Only two teams entered, one from Spain and one from France. But the French team of Maurice Durquette and Echegaray withdrew on the afternoon of the single contest due to a disagreement about the rules. Therefore, the contest was scratched and the Spanish team was awarded first prize. This is the only Olympics to date where pilates was an official sport. It was revived at the 1924, 1968, and 1992 games, though, as a demonstration sport.
We get pilates, but we can't get lumbata. I mean, come on.
Steve, it's the forbidden dance. We've been over this.
Oh, man.
Although it is dedicated to the fight to save the Amazon rainforest. One sport that no longer appears at the Olympics is croquet.
What?
At the 1900 Summer Olympics, three croquet events were contested.
And seven competitors beat each other with the mallet.
I'll tell you what, you go down here to El Presidente, you can get some croquet. I mean, jamón y queso.
Jamón, bro.
Jamón y queso.
Seven men and three women participated.
Of all the things I've ever stupidly said, that broke Steve. Come on, what the fuck?
Seven men and three women participated. The doubles competition was scheduled first. It was unclear whether the French pair that there had won that one had any competition.
It was unclear. That's the ultimate insult. Doesn't seem like the French really have to try here.
Yeah, it seems like they this couple just played, and then they're like, all right, you win. The one-ball singles was played the next week, followed by two-ball singles the week after. France, though, which supplied all 10 competitors, therefore won all the medals.
Oh, my God.
This was the only Olympiad where croquet was part of the official program, though there was the variant called roquet at the 1904 Summer Olympics, which we'll talk about. All events were restricted to amateurs, open to all nations, open to all competitors, and without handicapping, and are now regarded as Olympic events.
And extended credit to all people at the Red House.
At the Red House.
Where France and England buy furniture.
I like moving balls of all colors through hoops.
My name's Johnny, a.k.a. Dengage. God damn it.
Although croquet satisfied this criteria, it has been thought to have it was thought for a while that there had been an entrant from Belgium, a Marcel Hanschens, which is a Flemish name, and thus may have though it may have made an international competition, but it was later found out that he was actually from France, as were all the other players, and that at this event making it just all French competitors, so not an international event. There was only one paying spectator who attended the event.
Paying?
Yeah, paying. Like, they bought a ticket to watch Olympic croquet.
Oh, my God.
Jesus.
None of you guys are going to go with me? Ugh. I'm going to be the only one there. Merde.
Merde. the next one, which I had mentioned in the previous one, was roquet. Which is spelled almost like
that
rogue.
Sounds, that sounds really familiar. What is that?
R-O-Q-U-E?
Yeah. Oh, no, I don't know what that is.
It's an American variant of croquet played on a hard, smooth surface.
Where have I heard that before?
On a smooth surface?
Yeah.
Oh, you might have break people's ankles.
you might have heard about it, because I think I was reading about it, that they only still, like, one of the places they only still play it is, like, in New Jersey.
That could be, yeah, it could be from back
tracks.
Home. Yeah.
But
yeah,
it was
Jersey plays croquet, yeah.
No, like in a gym.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, you get those, like little centers where they play bocce that look like they're
all,
like,
what
they look like, yeah. they're all prison bathrooms from, like, the 1940s that they just converted into a bocce ball court. You're just like, man, these Italians.
Yeah, I want bocce Italians. The Italians have a chance to win something.
Hey, you kids got to get out of here. We got to film the shower scene from The Rock.
Wrap it up.
So Roque was very popular in the early part of the 20th century, and it was billed as the game of the century by its enthusiasts.
Wow. Well, you know, people that are into things, that's what they do, you know? They editorialize.
It is played on a hard sand or clay 30 by 60 foot court, bordered by a boundary wall and a curb beveled at the ends to form an octagon. Okay. Players use the wall to bank balls in a fashion similar to billiards, and they are played off the cushions of a as they are like sort of like bounce off the cushions of a billiard table. The wickets, called arches, are permanently anchored in the court. The arches are narrow, as in professional six-wicket croquet. The court has 10 arches at 7 points configured in double diamond formation.
Double the diamonds.
The two farthest endpoints and the central point of the figure eight are double arches, one after the other, while the four side points have single arches. Each arch of double arches at either end of the court count as a separate arch, but the double arches in the center are scored as a single arch. While in nine-wicket croquet, the single central wicket opens up to the length of the court facing the stakes in Roque. The double center arches face the sides of the court.
I mean, I don't even know the rules of original croquet, so I have no idea what the fuck these rules mean. I just know you try to hit the ball through the hoop.
Yeah, you try to hit it through the hoop and then hit the stake. It uses two stakes at the head of the court. Is the head stake, and the other stake at the far end is the turning stake.
I see.
The mallets with which the balls are struck have a shorter handle, approximately 24 inches, that are shorter than those of a croquet mallet. One end of the mallet is surfaced with rubber, and the other is hardwood, plastic, or aluminum. At the 1904 Olympic Games held in St. Louis, a Roque tournament was held. It was the only time that Roque was included in the Olympic program. The competitors played a double round-robin tournament with each player playing their opponents twice. All four players were from the United States.
I'm actually searching my because I take a lot of notes when I read for retention, and I'm searching right now to see where the fuck I heard that word. Can't find it though. Just ignore me. I'm thinking out loud. Go. Fucking hell, jeez.
The big one though that was removed from the Olympics for a long time.
Over here, okay?
It was was finally returned to the Olympics. Was rugby union football?
Oh man, my personal opinion is that rugby is the more pure form of football.
1000%.
I really feel like American football is great, but it's more like a turn-based strategy game with a lot of protections in place. And fucking rugby is war. Like, it is pure primal war, you know?
In September of 1923, the U.S. Olympic Committee agreed to send an American rugby team to the 1924 Paris Olympics. Rugby had been held twice. At the French Olympic Committee had scheduled the rugby event to kick off the 1924 Paris Games, and Romania and the USA were expected to provide only token opposition to the France, who were the European champions. This was despite the U.S. being the gold medalist at the 1920 Olympics. The Rugby Football Olympic tournament consisted of only one match. It was played between the United States and France. The U.S. squad was made up of American football players from California universities, primarily Stanford.
Send pro football players?
No, because they had to be amateurs back then.
Oh, okay.
And even then, like they just used these Stanford college football players mainly, and then players also from schools throughout California and UC Santa Clara.
Gotcha.
Okay. So due to American football becoming an increasingly violent sport, these and other West Coast universities chose to instead play rugby from 1906 to 1914. So they also had experience in it because, you know, football was getting a little too rough then before they, like, nailed down the rules.
Wait, like Sanford, like Florida?
No, Stanford.
Oh, I thought it was like you were like, California. Next up we have the Australian team versus the Sanford gentrificationers.
Now, the Sanford team has arrived because they saw a person of color in the city and are running him down as we speak.
Well, they feel there's a whole person of color team here, and the Sanford team ran away. They were frightened.
This team was the only team on time as they got to take off from their own private airport.
I'm sure you're all aware that Jackie Robinson was chased out of Sanford.
Yes. I was not, but I mean, I'm not at all surprised at all. Like, not
even he had to flee in the middle of the night to Daytona.
Jesus Christ, fucking ridiculous! I actually learned all I needed to know about Florida racism from that that one book, The Warmth of Other Suns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even specifically about Florida, but just the example that they give and the historical backdrop that they lay down in that is just, ugh, disgusting.
What's the name of it again?
The Warmth of Other Suns by Isabel Wilkerson. I'm ostentatious, but I read like a black novel every year for Black History Month. Ah, okay. I read it a couple years ago, and it was really good. Really good read.
So France believed that they were going to win the gold medal without any sort of opposition.
There's no sports in it, though, just so you know.
Damn.
Then why am I even reading
it? I want to read about beats with lettuce.
I'm not even implying. I was just making a joke. I'm not implying anything about Ryan. I just, you know how dudes are, right? Do they even get naked in this movie? I'm not watching it. What the fuck is going on? Why are we even watching? I'm just wasting my time. I could be on the internet.
Okay, listen, you're not implying anything about me, but oh boy, are you hitting the nail on the head.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Time to watch Wild Things again.
Time to pull out my he's in jail, Girls Gone Wild DVDs.
I love Wild Things. Fucking relax, Steve.
Yep.
The U.S. Olympic rugby team arrived in Paris via England on April 27th, 1924, after a 6,000-mile journey by train, bus, ship, and ferry from Oakland, California.
That's a lot of vehicles.
The majority of the players were college football players, as mentioned, from Stanford University, like in 1920. The team, though, was the target of hostility even before they set foot in France. At the port of Boulogne, immigration officials refused the U.S. team's entry, and the players, many of whom had been seasick during their turbulent crossing from Great Britain, spent over 12 hours waiting for the officials to resolve the situation.
Yeah.
The Olympic Games of 1924 opened on May 4th, and a match between France and Romania. Playing its first 15, the French notched a 59-3 victory over the Romanian team, scoring 13 tries, including four by Stade Français and winger Adolphe Duragai.
That's a name you don't hear very often anymore. Adolphe.
Winger Adolphe?
Adolphe. 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 Jorge.
Adolphus Hilarious.
Yeah. After the match, another round of trouble would start over the referee for the French and U.S. match. This dispute degraded into the French no longer providing any practice fields for the team, so the Americans found themselves a park in the outskirts of the city to practice. Wow. Fanning the flames on this, the French press published an article by a Paris city councilor criticizing the U.S. team. The Americans invited the Frenchmen to come down to the pitch to discuss the matter. And to make matters worse, an argument started over the French Olympic Committee's ruling that the American side could not film their match against Romania that weekend. A French company had been awarded the sole rights to filming the Olympics, and American request to film the match was flatly denied. A meeting on the 8th did not resolve the issue, so Sam Goodman told the French organizers that the U.S. would pull out of the games.
Is that Sam Goody? Is that like his nickname?
You know, Steve, you just got to spoil these things. I was going to talk about
it. He ended up getting out of sports, the skinny guy? Selling overpriced LPs.
Dude, I miss Sam Goody's.
Oh, it was the best. You go in, look at the same 400 CDs, and then leave. It was awesome.
Yep.
There was that one metal section in the back that was just like six Metallica CDs and one Pantera, and you were like, what the fuck? I don't want John Cicada.
They're all the bad ones, too. It's like not none of the good ones.
Yeah, fucking Black Album. Sorry. I hate Black Album.
And adding further fuel to the fire.
I know. I'm terrible.
The American player's clothes were stolen during that day's training session. Even though a French attendant had been posted, the team lost about $4,000 worth of cash and possessions.
Goddamn, $4,000 too. This is what you said, 19 what?
This is 1924.
So it's like $86 million today.
Cleveland and his teammates were not very happy about this because of their treatment in the press. The American side was now cursed on and spat on in the streets of Paris.
You don't fucking say that they were upset about it.
Yeah, the French press also whipped up, also aided by whipping up fierce anti-American sentiment in Paris. On Sunday, on that Sunday, May 11th, the U.S. defeated Romania at Colombe Stadium. The fullback, Charlie Doe, scored 13 points.
I'm the fullback.
So, if they had their clothes stolen and all that shit, like, how do they compete? I guess they got Greek style.
Well, I guess they. Yeah,
is that why they won? All 12 dudes just walked out their dick swinging. The team was like, you know what? We don't want the medal that bad.
No, we're good.
We forfeit.
Even though they had this impressive win, a difficult situation was brewing. Each time the Americans would touch the ball, the French crowd of about 6,000 booed and hissed. The crowd would cheer and scream every time the Romanians gained possession of the ball. And though everyone felt that the Americans would play a harsh physical match, both the American and French sporting press noted the lack of violence and the skilled nature of the U.S. play, coupled with their size and fitness.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the French press also even conceded that the fans had been unfair at the match. Still, the odds were set at 5-1 against the U.S. with a 20-point spread in the upcoming match with France. 2 days later, the issue over the finals referee was settled when Albert Freethy of Wales was selected to be the referee. During the final between France and the United States at Colombe Stadium, French fans booed and hissed the American team. French fans also threw bottles and rocks onto the field at American players and officials. While brawls broke out in the stands, U.S. spectator Gideon Nelson was knocked unconscious after being hit in the face by a walking stick, and French fans invaded the pitch at the final whistle, leaving the police to protect the Americans.
Jesus!
at the medal ceremony, the Star Spangled Banner was drowned out by the booing and hissing of French fans, and the American team had to be escorted to their locker room under police protection. Crowd violence during and after the pitch invasion at the 1924 Olympic final served to give rugby a poor image. This, combined with the problems of attracting sufficient teams to make it a viable competition, the desire to include more individual and women's sporting events, and the departure of a major advocate when Baron Pierre de Coubertin stepped down as head of the Olympic movement in 1925, marked the downfall of rugby at the Olympics.
Bro, there wasn't like this much hostility and backlash when Jesse Owens won in Nazi Germany. Like, that's insane.
He was actually treated
way better.
Better in Germany, like just around town, than he was in the United States.
Oh, absolutely.
God damn, yeah. Frenchies.
We were a disaster zone back then.
In 1920,
I'm sorry. All right, time out. Back then,
yeah, still are. Yeah, in a lot of ways, still are. We're a lot better, but I mean, yeah.
In 1928, the IOC turned down a request to stage a rugby event at the Amsterdam Games. An exhibition tournament was held at the 1936 Berlin Games, with France, Germany, Italy, and Romania competing. Italy in 1960, the Soviet Union in 1980, and South Korea in 1988 made requests to have rugby union brought back. The 1980 request did not pass, and the 1988 games came close, but failed to see the sport's admission, which was backed by the International Rugby Football Board, which is now the World Rugby
Association. They're trying to convince Reagan to, like, throw his weight behind it, and they're like, listen, rugby. Reagan's like, what's rugby? They're like, just think of it like as a pussier American football, because you know how Americans think they're just everything's like Amerocentric. Well, that sounds like something I could get behind then.
Now, how many chimps are in the team?
Oh my god.
Because I played football with a chimp once and he was quite good. And only if that damn chimp had like pulled harder, we wouldn't have had to deal with Ronald Reagan.
Oh man.
You know, I got out of the way just in time.
Because I'm pretty sure I know he was in a couple of them because he was in a lot of B movies, but I believe it's Bedtime for Bonzo is the one where the chimp plays like college football.
Yes.
And there's a scene in the movie where I guess like they were doing the scene and the chimp grabbed his necktie and started pulling on it very hard. It started straggling Ronald Reagan and they had to like get the chimp off of it because he almost killed Ronald Reagan.
Someone get this goddamn chimp off me.
In 1976, 22 African countries in Guyana demanded that New Zealand be banned from the Olympics in Montreal due to a New Zealand rugby team touring South Africa, which had been banned from the Olympics since 1964 because of its policy of apartheid. As rugby union was no longer an Olympic sport, the IOC declined to ban New Zealand, and these 23 nations boycotted the 1976 Olympics.
Oof.
Apart from supporting the individual host city's requests, the IRB did not focus its own efforts on returning the sport to the Olympics until the mid-1990s, when efforts began to reunite the two movements with a series of informal meetings between the IRB secretary, Keith Rowlands, and the British Olympic Association secretary, Dick Palmer. Mm-hmm. In 1994, when Vernon...
I'm sorry. Dick what was Palmer. His name?
Dick Palmer.
This is not real. This is not fucking real. Go
listen, ahead. You Dick Palmer.
Ryan's this red face just to stay there trying not to laugh.
I'm like that kid in the meme, just the fucking veins popping out of my fucking head.
He's about to pass out.
Oh my god.
In 1994, when Vernon Pook of Wales was elected chairman of the IRB, the march towards Olympic recognition began in earnest. Pook convinced the IRB council that Olympic membership, initially as a non-participation sport, would be beneficial to rugby, and offer the IRB member unions membership of their national Olympic committees. Many European federations, such as France, Italy, and Romania, have been members of their national Olympic committees for decades. The demand to get rugby back in the Olympics mounted as more rugby nations from Africa, Asia, Oceania, and the Americas joined the IRB because it was a sport seen as providing a realistic medal opportunity for a number of smaller nations. A significant step in the process of acceptance back into the Olympic movement was achieved at a ceremony held in Cardiff in November of 1994, when the IRB was officially confirmed as a recognized international federation of the IOC. At the ceremony, International Olympic Committee President Juan Antonio Samaranch pointed out that rugby's history and values were very much in tune with the Olympic philosophy and traditions. This historic meeting in Cardiff led to IRB representation at annual IOC meetings and consideration for the inclusion in the program of future Olympic Games. In October of 2009, the IOC voted at its session in Copenhagen to include the sevens version of the sport in the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. The event made its debut in an Olympic program at the 2014 Summer Youth Olympics. At the 2024 Olympics, the French men's team would win the gold medal and the New Zealand women's team would win the gold medal in their respective categories.
Interesting.
But yeah, that the crowd, like, the hooliganism that went on at rugby was so bad that it just got banned from the Olympics for like 90 years.
That's insane to me. Like, it's the Olympics. It's not like an exhibition sport, you know, it's not an exhibition game. Like, I think at home, you're representing your team on an international scale. Like, come on.
I think part of the problem too was that, you know, Olympic, like, rugby wasn't really that popular, and like World War I, like, killed a lot of rugby players. So that, like, there wasn't enough teams to compete. And I guess by the time we get to like the 2000s, you know, rugby's become like a big international sport, especially in like Africa and like Asia and Oceania, obviously.
Yeah.
That they can actually like compete in it now. Pip boys, those are the discontinued Olympic sports, but one of them undiscontinued.
I wanted more.
I'm sure there's plenty more sport. I'm sure that, like, you know, underwater basket weaving at some point was in the Olympics.
Hey.
They train their whole lives for that, Ryan. It's
my favorite sport.
I mean, it's my favorite because it doesn't take a lot of athletic ability.
Exactly.
That's where you're wrong.
I like those sports like esports where it doesn't take stamina. It doesn't take athleticism. It just takes – well, maybe it takes some stamina. Just takes some stamina to sit there for like a esport. But like you don't have to be athletic. You know what I'm saying? You don't got to train with weights and cardio and all that shit. Bro, you just got to sit there and just be – as much of a fucking slob as you can be, just sitting at your computer doing nothing but training.
Exactly. You can be that guy on the couch that like is commenting on all the Olympic sports. You know? I showed Steve that. I was like, there was a guy where, because he made a joke about it, and then I had a video where it was just the guy like, I think it was a gymnast that fell or something like that. And he's just like this fat British dude on the couch. He's like, ah, what a fucking loser. Like that.
Skill issue.
Yeah. He was just like, buddy.
I don't think you know.
I was at a bar with my friend and we were watching swimming and I just turned and looked at him and said, I could do that if I wanted to.
So good.
If we're all watching the Olympics and I start saying I could do that, guys, cut me off. It is it is over. I've had enough. It's time for me to go home.
Yeah.
When I'm looking at like the, what do they call that? The pommel horse. Talk about I could do that. No, no, the fuck I cannot.
Ryan's gonna go all Gymkata on us. You know, he's gonna start beating up people on the pommel horse.
All right. Well, with that,
good night. Good luck.
Bye.